One,
two,
three,
four.
Monster movie.
Fun time, go! Monster movie.
Fun time, go! Monster
movie.
Fun time,
go!
Monster movie.
Fun time, go!
With Precious D and Honey Bee.
Fun time, go!
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and neighbors, welcome to Monster Movie Fun Time Go. I'm Precious D. My other host, Honeybee, is not here today because we're doing one of those role-playing episodes we do every now and then. Today, I have with me Clipper Arnold, and he is here to talk about his expansion for a game he already has. It's called Toku Legends, and it is funding now on Kickstarter. Welcome to the show, Clipper.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here and talk more about the game.
Yeah, so this is an expansion for Nebula Chaos.
Yes, exactly. So Nebula Chaos is a sci-fi space opera tabletop RPG. It runs on what we call the Polyhedra Core engine, which is sort of a system that I've been running for probably over a decade. It's pretty straightforward for the most part, like a 2d6 plus stat system. I don't know how familiar you or your audience might be with those mechanic minutiae, but basically it's just built to facilitate, you know, relatively like straightforward, quick and easy role playing, but with enough depth to give people a robust experience. So we made a game called Justice Velocity in 2019, which is a Fast and Furious inspired tabletop RPG, kind of like action movie, buff guys, explosions, that kind of thing. And we followed that up with Nebula Chaos, which is the same system, but it's in space. You know, with laser swords, goofy aliens, stuff like that. And then Toku Legends is a supplement for Nebula Chaos, which is, you know, a tokusatsu-inspired Henshin Heroes type of thing. So, you know, Power Rangers, Super Sentai, Kamen Rider. Basically, sci-fi squad-based superheroes is the whole angle. So,
yes, and that is why we have you here today, because we talk about kaiju movies here, but we also talk about related role-playing games when they come up. And there seems to be more and more of them these days, which is great.
I saw you guys had some Power Rangers episodes on there and stuff. I actually, you know, yeah. I was doing a lot of research and I was like, oh, this is a kaiju podcast. I'm like, I don't know. Like, there are kaiju in Toku Legends, but I was like, for a moment, yeah. I was like, I don't know if we have enough kaiju. And then I was like, oh, they do other stuff too. That makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, it's mostly kaiju. But I mean, there's, you know, Power Rangers, there's a kaiju at the end of every episode. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's related. At G-Fest last year, I did a panel on kaiju in role-playing games. And it seems like enough new stuff has come out this year. To do an update to that panel if they select me to do so. So that's, we'll certainly be talking about Toku Legends if we get to do that panel.
Cool.
But it's all you know, variations on that theme. As long as a big monster shows up at some point, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, cool.
So what are you adding to Nebula Chaos with this supplement specifically? What kind of new rules and options are in the Toku Legends?
Sure. So we're trying to keep it quick and punchy, super tight, you know, trying to do like the page range we're shooting for is 16 to 24 pages, because we're trying to make it, you know, a zine with not overburdening people with enough rules, with too many rules rather, but giving them enough to run the type of game that we want to play. And so that being said, it's the main differences between Toku Legends and Nebula Chaos are the changes that we made to adapt it to a more squad-based superhero system instead of, you know, space opera type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So there's still like blasters, swords, laser swords, psionic abilities, you know, stuff like that, that have like a good crossover between the two. But the stuff that makes it more uniquely Toku are, there's a henshin mechanic, right? So on your character sheet, there's a civilian mode and then there's a henshin mode. And you can transform between the two. It has an effect on your energy points, you know, and there's some sort of like mechanical incentive in some instances where you do want to be in civilian mode before you ultimately transform. And that's just sort of alluding to, you know, a lot of, you know, Kamen Rider, Super Sentai, etc., sort of plays on that angle of like, you know, that there's something outside of your hero mode that you have to engage in, like you have to go to a day job or whatever, you know. And so there's some like role-playing opportunities there, but also, you know, like in Power Rangers or something, sometimes the putties get sprung on the heroes before they have time to transform, so you have to do a little bit of back and forth and build up to that cool moment. So that's sort of like the henshin mechanic is sort of alluding to that, right? It just like the power fantasy of transforming from your regular mode into the super powered suit type of thing. But also the energy point system was one of the elements that we changed. So I guess this sort of ties into that too, is like when you're in civilian mode, it starts as it would in any of our other games, right? Which is where you have an energy point total. It starts at its maximum and it goes down. But once you transform, you start at zero. And you build up energy points for every moment of combat, or what we call tense situations. And that's sort of also in the Toku vein of like, you know, you don't just walk into a room as Kamen Rider and use your most powerful attack and then leave, right? You're building up to those moments. So we have that in the energy point system, but we also have something called a squad point system, which is another table where you're building up throughout the course of a session through collaborated maneuvers and teamwork, etc. Points that let you do special abilities or special effects. Some of those are like, you know, finishing moves or ultimate team attacks, but they're also like sometimes support abilities. Like you can use your squad points that you've built up to save an ally from a flaming building falling on top of his head. There's an ability called emergency extraction, you know, stuff like that. But basically just trying to replicate that, like, that energy and like the momentum of, you know, some sort of like tokusatsu show where this all builds up throughout the course of an episode until it gets released in a very dramatic climactic moment. So
yeah, you can't just go straight to Megazord as soon as the putties show up and just stomp on them.
Right. Yeah. It's a crescendo. Yeah.
You got to build up to it. Though, I think it'd be hilarious if they actually did that one time. Let's just cut it down. Splat.
Why didn't they just take the Eagles to Mordor, you know?
Yeah. Eagles are not taxis.
But yeah. So those are like the core, like, mechanical differences in this system. But then there's also, like, you know, we made a bunch of, unique abilities and weapons and items and vehicles and enemies to more fit the theme more appropriately. There is also a bit of mecha rules for when the kaijin turns into a kaiju, of course, and you have to combine and use a co-piloted 5-person mech to take it down. So,
right. And when it gets to that point, do the individual players still have things they have to do, you know, each person doing something on their turn, or do they just decide as a group what the mech is going to do, or how does that work?
Actually, both of those. So there's two different ways to run it. One is what we call piloting roles spelled R-O-L-E-S. And that's basically like, you know, you have one person responsible for moving the legs, you have one person responsible for ranged weapons, one person responsible for the melee. And then if you have more players than that, you know, there's also someone working communications or the computer targeting system. So that's one way. That's how I ran it in our test sessions, and it actually works surprisingly well. But there's also the alternative optional rule, which is committee, which is basically you just treat the mech as a single player character. And everyone sort of decides as a group what actions it will take for that turn. And so that might be more appropriate for, you know, like if you're running a 9-person group or something like that, it's easier to just get everyone to agree on what the mech should do rather than parting out each little finger or something like that, presumably.
I've seen a similar thing in lots of starship-based games.
Yeah.
Where once the combat starts, each player has a different role they have to do in each round. Engineers got to tune things up, and the weapon guys got to take aim, and the navigator has to maneuver and that kind of stuff.
And it keeps
everybody involved instead of just the captain pulling the trigger in it while everybody else sits around and watches.
Yeah, and like those games, I mean, I guess it depends on the game, but at least the way that we run it, like, we've only whipped out the transforming mech once in like 8 sessions. And I think it'll probably make another appearance in the finale here this week. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like you're not running it necessarily every session, but when it comes out, it's a big dramatic moment, right? Also, I should say, it's not like with that in mind, a lot of our rules that use what people might call subsystems is they're typically built to be something that's like quick and punchy and easy and adaptable. That way you're not reading like 30 pages of mecha rules just to run it for like that one session, right? Or 30 pages of starship rules. It's supposed to be relatively seamless, relatively simple and straightforward, just to get you know, that narrative experience while also having enough of a mechanical depth to sort of back it up. So like if anyone's listening to this and they're like, oh, nice, I'm going to be running a mecha game and a mech's going to come out every session, this might not be the game for that. But if you are wanting to throw it in to get that big climactic moment, that's sort of what we have it there for, you know? So.
Okay. Now, I have Nebula Chaos. I think I backed that Kickstarter about a year ago, 2 years ago, whenever that was.
Awesome. Thank you for supporting us.
You're welcome. I had this copy sitting on my computer. I haven't actually had time to play. As we all know, and as I've said many times before, games are not for playing.
They're for collecting.
Gazing at longingly. Hoping for the day you'll get to play. But I want to say I really like the art in Nebula Chaos. Who did the art, and are they doing the art on this game as well?
Yeah, so I also am a fan of the art. I'm not personally a stellar 2D artist, so I'm very appreciative of the people that do that kind of work. In Nebula Chaos specifically, the cover art was done by Armand Villaver, who is a comic book artist based out of Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I'm originally from. He did a comic book called Gladstone's School of World Conquerors, which is kind of cool. It's like a evil Teen Titans kind of thing. And he's just been an artist who I've thought was really cool for a while. So it's really nice when you get to like collaborate with people that you've admired and work with them on projects like this. So he did the cover. Metacomic Studios, who are based out of Indonesia, I've worked with them on quite a few projects, including our Mork Borg module that we made. They did the comic at the beginning of that, but they did most of the interior art. And then I also did one piece of art for it. It's the page that has all the aliens on it. There's like 30 aliens on the page, the alien species. That I did that page, but that's my only contribution in terms of artwork to that project. Also, Anders Carlson did the alpha art for it. So he has one page in there. And then Logan Stahl, finally, is the artist who did the individual figure art. So when there's all the pre-made characters and everything, that's his art there. And he has a very specific style. He specializes in doing science fantasy and sci-fi type of art, so he's a really cool dude too. In Toku Legends, however, we have one artist, and his name is Corey Lewis, and he's similarly to Armand Villaver, is just an amazing artist who I've admired for a very long time. He has a very specific style. He's worked on a lot of projects, and similarly, I was very ecstatic to have him, his help with putting Toku Legends together. So he's the sole artist on the Toku Legends scene, which is really cool.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how that all turns out. So this is obviously this you care about. What inspired this? Did you grow up watching these kind of shows? Is that something you've always been a big fan of?
Yeah, I mean, so like obviously I was super into Power Rangers when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And increasingly I've gotten, you know, really into you know, the original Kamen Rider manga, the Go Ranger manga. You know, I've been surrounded by like squad-based heroes media in some capacity. You know, like even in my mind, I feel like Sailor Moon is very similar to like Super Sentai in some ways, or even like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles have like some a family resemblance, if you will. But yeah, I just have always really liked the design of the characters, you know, the helmets, the belts, this like merging between like sci-fi and bio and like magic and everything like that. It just is very evocative. All the heroes are always very colorful. There's this just a lot of unique elements, you know, like this stuff that we were talking about before, like transforming heroes being like a core trope, monsters that turn into giant kaijus that you need to take out with a mech is like just lots of those elements really speak to something specific in that genre that I'm really into. I mean, there's a lot of influences named in the zine, like towards the end and stuff like that. Some of those are more unconventional. I will say, like, personally, I haven't watched a lot of the source material of, like, Super Sentai. I'm more familiar with the manga and, like, a few of the shows. I am into Kamen Rider. Probably not, like, the biggest Kamen Rider head on the planet, but I, you know, I definitely like Kamen Rider. And then there's more, like, some more obscure, like, left-to-center references as well. I really like Samurai Flamenco as well. I just want to give that one a quick shout-out. And, like, Beautiful Joe and stuff like that. But, yeah, I hope that answers your question. I try to pull from, like, a large web of influences, you know, and try to do the source material justice as much as possible through, like, doing the research and everything as well. So,
did you get a chance to see Shin Kamen Rider when it was in the theater?
Yeah, I saw it in theaters. It was only showing for one day in New York. It was really funny too, because I invited like probably eight of my friends, and it was one of those things where it's like I was very into going, like I could not miss it, and so I invited like a bunch of people who like might be interested in seeing this cool movie, you know, and everyone surprisingly agreed to go. But then when I went to buy the tickets, there were only three tickets left, and then we found out who who really wanted to go. So but it was amazing. I mean, we bought the tickets at the last minute too, so of course we were like in the very front row with the big screen covering over us. But I will say, one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen anything quite exactly like that before, and I have a hard time believing that there's anything that's going to be made exactly like that ever again, because it was just really like amazing. You know, it's I don't even know how to describe it. Just very like cool moments, very like great storytelling. I'm amazed that they were able to condense like a whole season into like one like movie, you know. And I don't know, just a lot of great cinematography as well, really interesting shots. And just what I liked most, right, is like it kept a very specific sort of tone throughout. There's a very unique tone to Anno, but that has crossover to the first Kamen Rider season, and also that it didn't lose just like the cool factor. Like I feel like that's a really big part of Toku, right, is just seeing like, you know, him transform his motorcycle into like 50 jets and skyrocket into the sky, only to do this giant rider kick like descending down from the heavens. Like that's just like nothing beats that, you know. I was like almost like jumping out of my chair when I saw that, just like at how cool it was, you know.
Well, there was only about five people in the theater here.
Oh, well, really?
I'm in a much smaller town, so there's not as, and for most of those events, whatever it is, there's usually only about five people in the theater here. doesn't matter if it's opera or riff tracks or Doctor Who or Shin Ultraman. There's only ever like 5 people in the theater, which is good.
Damn, that's crazy.
It's good for me though, and I didn't know that much about Kamen Rider, but I took a friend who like Kamen Rider was their favorite thing, so she was able to fill me in on, oh yeah, that's from the show. No, that's a new thing. So it was good to have that expertise on hand to help me out. And then it appeared on Amazon like immediately, which I thought was weird. It took forever for Shin Ultraman to be available like on DVD, but they put Shin Kamen Rider up immediately almost.
Yeah, right. I still haven't seen Shin Ultraman either. And I think they released it the same night at that theater. So it was like you had to make a choice, you know.
Oh, I saw a month apart.
Because it was for one night only, you know.
They were on months apart. And
okay.
And I think they had 2 nights. They had like an English night and a subtitle night.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I don't remember if Kamen Rider had that option though. I think it just had the one night here as well. So what is your favorite Kusatsu?
You know, that's really hard to say, because I feel like it, you know, it's I mean, I'm tempted to just say Shin Kamen Rider after just giving it that glowing review, but yeah, I don't know. I try to pull from a lot. I'm watching 01 right now, which is not great, but I'm like,
well, it doesn't
work.
I mean, like
it,
one, like one know? Specific, you know, like is it generally Power Rangers? There's not like one specific version of Power Rangers, or what, you know, is it Kamen Rider in general, or
probably Kamen Rider? I would say, I mean, definitely there's still like the heart of Power Rangers, will like always live on inside of me because I was like really into it as a kid, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I've been a lot more into Kamen Rider in recent years. There's just something, it feels like it, I mean, not that Super Sentai or Power Rangers doesn't have this, but it just has a very specific tonal difference to me, that I feel is like more desirable.
I'm sure most Americans, Power Rangers was their gateway, their opening, their introduction. Mm-hmm. I was a little too old for Power Rangers when it came out. So I never really got into it because I could, you know, I was just old enough to see all the flaws, the bad
sure,
acting.
Yeah.
It was the bad acting. It was just like, okay,
yeah, for sure.
But I've always been into Godzilla movies and that kind of thing. So, and in doing this show, of course, we're anything peripheral, it's coming across our view as we go through on this show. We go through the history of this whole thing, so when we got to that point we had to talk about Power Rangers and the Power Rangers movie.
Oh yeah, totally.
So but we don't do too much TV.
I have to send you something. Okay. This is like a joke I made on the internet a while back. I guess for the listeners at home, here's the joke. It's someone spraying particles all over someone else and it says, "Yeah, man, so Kamen Rider is actually made by the same guy who made Power Rangers, except in Japan they're called Super Sentai, and it falls under the tokusatsu genre. Sentai just means fighting group, and tokusatsu is special filming, which actually began with the original Godzilla." I've, like, word vomited that whole paragraph to my wife, like, 6 times, so.
Did it not take the first 5 times? Did she just tune you out?
She's, you know, it's always, she's like, "Wait, so what is it? Godzilla?" And I'm just like, yeah, so. Because it is funny. I mean, that's like in a very boiled down, like, explanation. That's like what it is, you know. But to anyone who's unfamiliar with it, it's just a mess of words, you know, which is like kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of the funny thing, too, about, like, you know, calling it Toku Legends, right? I guess, I mean, anything, right? So, like, tokusatsu, I think most people, technically, it means, like, special filming, special effects, right? Which dates back to Godzilla, monster movies, etc. But when people talk about toku, or, like, tokusatsu, at least in the West, a lot of times they're referring specifically to, like, the brand of, like, transforming heroes, like, you know, Super Sentai or Kamen Rider or Power Rangers, right? or Garo, or so on and so forth. So it's, you know, it's definitely a term that has an interesting and nuanced and meaningful history. But it's also context dependent, right? So it's like a whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like people use the term kaiju when they really mean daikaiju. And it has a more generic meaning, but we don't know what we mean when we say kaiju. We know what we're, we understand.
Sure, yeah.
What we're talking about. So Toku Legends is funding on Kickstarter now. It's got about 5 days to go at the time of this recording. I'm going to try to get this out later today just so people have time to check it out. But I believe you did reach your funding goal already, though, right?
Yeah, a little bit after the first day, we reached our initial funding goal, which is great because that just means that the book will exist in some capacity and people will have access to it and get to look at the pretty pictures or play it ultimately. But yeah, right now we're coming up on our first stretch goal. We got quite a few more. I don't know how far into the stretch goals that we'll get, but some of the items on there are free stickers, bonus art for the zine, potentially a digital comic illustrated by Corey Lewis, starting adventures, stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I'm just happy. This is definitely a passion project for me. So making it into a reality is like the big thrust of it, and getting it out there for people to enjoy is, you know, what it's all about. So everything after that is just sort of icing on the cake for everyone who's supporting it and for us who are making it. So I'm really happy that everyone supported this thus far. I'm happy that we have the opportunity to still fund it and get it into more people's hands. And yeah, thank you for doing the show and, you know, hopefully getting it in front of a few more people who might be interested and, you know, helping to support us in that endeavor.
Yeah, really we'll put a link to the Kickstarter in the show notes, folks. Follow that. This is part of Zine Quest 2024, which is when Kickstarter encourages people to put out little zine-sized role-playing games. I don't know if they other types of zines are included. All I ever see the role-playing ones. Zines used to be about all kinds of different things. Usually punk music, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think totally. Well, I think that's sort of what's great about it, right? Is like in tabletop RPGs and punk zines, they both like had a zine moment, and it was around the same time frame, and they were both sort of evolving at the same time. And like, as a punk musician myself and as like a tabletop RPG designer myself, I get a big kick out of the crossover of that type of thing. But yeah, the Kickstarter Zine Quest is pretty uniquely tabletop RPG oriented. So
all right, well, Clipper, thank you so much for joining us here today. Folks, as always, if you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on wherever it is you're listening to us. You can find links to all our stuff at mmftg.com. And of course, if you want to support the show, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/mmftg.com. And as I said, check out our show notes for the link to the Kickstarter. And I will put the link to your regular webpage in there as well. Thanks again for joining me, Clipper.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Until next time, I have been Precious D. Remember to keep calm and take shelter in basements. Whatever you do, do not misuse science. We will not see you, but you will hear us next time on Monster Movie Funtime Go. You've been listening to Monster Movie Funtime Go. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on your podcasting platform of choice. Our theme song is by the Texicato Folk Rock Punk featuring Lita Lopez. You can support the show, find links to our social media, and even leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/mmftg.